This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, The African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by African News Panorama. We shall close today's program with Millennium Appointment. I am Festus Terawali. Pope Francis on Monday morning received an audience, members of the Pontifical Swiss Guard, on the occasion of the swearing-in ceremony of new recruits, which takes place every year on the 6th of May. In his address, the Pope encouraged them to cultivate human relationships and community life in their service. The Pontifical Swiss Guard, founded by Pope Julius II in 1506, is a military body whose main task is to constantly monitor the safety of the person of the Pope and his residence. Lisa Zengarini reports.
Saluto il comandante, gli ufficiali e tutti i membri della Guardia Svizzera Pontificia.
Extending his greetings to the commander and chaplain of the Swiss Guards, Pope Francis renewed his gratitude to the military corps for its presence in the Vatican and for its service, which he said is always generous and diligent, noting the strong camaraderie of the Swiss Guards, which incentivizes their motivation. Pope Francis highlighted the crucial importance of relationships for all Christians.
Le buone relazioni sono una strada maestra per la nostra crescita e maturazione umana e cristiana.
Good relationships are the main path of our human and Christian growth and maturation, he said, recalling that much of what characterizes our personality we have learned through relationships with parents, brothers and sisters, schoolmates, teachers, friends and work colleagues. This is why, the Pope stressed, their 2 years of service in the Swiss Guard is such an important and formative time for them.
Vi esorto a coltivare attivamente la vita comunitaria.
Concluding, Pope Francis further urged the new recruits to cultivate community life rather than isolate themselves in front of a computer or a smartphone, as young people often do today. It is better to use free time for moments of fraternity in which to talk and share, the Pope said. The swearing-in ceremony of the new Swiss Guards is set to take place this evening in the St. Damasus Courtyard in the Vatican. Of the 34 new recruits, 16 are German-speaking, 16 French-speaking, and 2 Italian-speaking. Before meeting Pope Francis, the Swiss Guards and their families attended a mass presided over early this morning by Cardinal Secretary of State Pietro Parolin in St. Peter's Basilica. I am Lisa Zengarini.
Earlier on Monday, the Holy Father received an audience, President Bajram Begaj of the Republic of Albania, who later met with Cardinal Secretary of State Pietro Parolin, accompanied by Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher, Secretary for Relations with States and International Organizations. A press office statement said during the course of the cordial talks, which took place at the Secretariat of State, appreciation was expressed for the positive bilateral relations and mention was also made of some open questions in relations between church and state. The statement said attention then turned to Albania's path to membership of the European Union and various international issues, with a focus on the Western Balkans region and the conflict in the Middle East and Ukraine. At the end of the audience, the Pope presented the President of Albania with a number of gifts, including a bronze sculpture, volumes of papal documents, and his 2024 message for peace. Pope Francis undertook an apostolic journey to Albania's capital of Tirana on the 21st of September 2014. Voters in Chad went to the polls on Monday to cast their ballot in a long-delayed presidential election that is set to end 3 years of military rule under interim president Mahamat Debi Itno. Mr. Debi Itno seized power in 2021 after his father, who ran the country for more than 3 decades, was killed while leading troops against rebel forces. Last year, the government announced it was extending the 18-month transition for 2 more years, which provoked protests across the country. There are 10 candidates on the ballot, including Mr. Itno and a woman. Some opposition groups and leaders in civil society have called for a boycott of the vote, fearing a lack of transparency and possible vote rigging. The bishops of Chad, in a statement issued after their ordinary session in April, called on the transitional government to do everything possible to guarantee the smooth running and success of the polls by promoting the free expression of its citizens' choice in compliance with the electoral code and the transparency of results of the votes cast in the ballot boxes. If no candidate wins 50% of the votes, there will be a runoff election on the 22nd of June. Soldiers began voting early on Saturday. You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The government of Rwanda has denied any involvement in the bombing of 2 camps of internally displaced people in the city of Goma in neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. The camps were bombed using mortars last Friday, May 3rd, and 16 people were killed and 31 others were wounded. The State Department of the United States of America has blamed Rwanda and the Congolese M23 rebels for the attack. Reports from Kenya say government has intensified its air and water rescue operations after a river known as Nyando in the eastern Rift Valley part burst its banks on Saturday, releasing tons of water that submerged several villages and disrupted transport on the highway from Kisumu to Nairobi. The water level of River Nyando has been rising for weeks due to the ongoing torrential rains that have caused floods and landslides, in which more than 200 people have lost their lives. A joint team of the Kenya Red Cross, Kenya Coast Guard Services, and Kenya Wildlife Services are reported to be using boats and helicopters to access the submerged villages. You can hear more on the floods in Kenya in a moment in our feature Millennium Appointment. Delegates of the ruling Frelimo Party in Mozambique have chosen the governor of the central Inyambane province, Daniel Chapo, to be the new leader of their party. With that election, Mr. Chapo, a former political science lecturer and radio presenter, has been put in a position to become the party's presidential candidate for the elections scheduled for October 9th this year. The incumbent, Philippe Nyusi, will be ending his second and last term in office. Frelimo has ruled Mozambique since 1975, when the country gained independence from Portugal. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. The president of the Symposium of Episcopal Conferences of Africa and Madagascar, Cardinal Fridolin Ambongo Besungu, says the Church in Africa is living in a new Kairos moment, that is, an opportune and decisive moment as the Church on the continent continues to grow. Cardinal Ambongo, who is also the Archbishop of Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of Congo, said this in a wide-ranging interview with our colleague Sheila Furish. The cardinal spoke on the sidelines of the recently held preparatory workshop in Kenya for African participants in the upcoming second session of the Synod on Synodality.
Cardinal Ambongo, thank you so much for joining us here on Vatican News and talking to us about this preparatory meeting for the Synod delegates of Africa and Madagascar. First and foremost, what are your impressions?
I'm so happy to share this experience of synodality with the African delegation to the Synod. I'm so happy because I saw from everyone, we were very interested to share our experience and also our hope for the next session of the synod. For me, it's a good experience of synodality, sharing together on the prayer, also our hope and our experience for the church in Africa.
Speaking of the church in Africa, a lot was said, and one of the key points is to see the church in Africa strengthening her presence within the context of the universal church. Can this be achieved? Because it is something that comes all the way from the Kampala document. It's nothing new.
The document of Kampala is a good document. I think we have to study this document and to see what we can do. Because there, African bishops try to give the orientation for the future of the church in Africa. We have to study. We have to visit this document. But the reality of the church in Africa now, for me, we are sharing now in Africa, for me, is a new Kairos. It's a new Kairos because the church in Africa is growing, and the world, the universal church, is seeing Africa now with a new look, a new consideration, mainly after this document, Fiducia Supplicans. Africa shows to the world, Africa is a unity, and Africa is not only following others. We have our value, and we want to continue with this value.
In the context of Africa, in a synodal church, how will the church in Africa accompany young people?
Church in Africa is really a young church. It is a church for the young people, as you say. The synod can be a new opportunity to listen more to the young people, because synodality means walking together, living together, walking together. But more than the half of the people in Africa is young. We have to work together with these young people. I think and I hope this synod can be a new opportunity for young people. The problem of immigration, many young people from Africa prefer to go to Europe because they are thinking that Europe is a paradise. We go there. But if we can create the new condition here for young people, it will be not necessary to leave Africa to go there. But I think this synod could help. The problem of poverty. If our young people leave Africa and prefer to go to Europe because they have no job, because of poverty, because of war, insecurity, this synod can be a new Pentecost for the young people. But we have to work together, not only as the church, but also with other churches, other religion, mainly with the government. Because as a church, we have not possibility to create the condition for young people. But if we work together with government, we can do more for young people. For women, you know, our continent is the part of the world where women was always considered in the second class. This synod can help also to can be a help for women to live from this condition, traditional condition. So I'm happy from Rome and also here. We are together with lay people, with women, with young people, talking about the future of Africa and the future of the church in Africa.
Africa was given a special task, which is the question of polygamy. How far are you as SECAM with regards to this task when we look at polygamy, number one? Number two, we are seeing groups of women in different parts of the world calling for the diaconate of women. Is this something that can happen in the Catholic Church in Africa? So it's 2 points, polygamy and the diaconate of women. Where is SECAM with regards to those 2 points?
The first point about polygamy. Polygamy is not a reality only in Africa. You can find polygamy anywhere. And there are ad form, the new form of polygamy. But we are talking about the traditional polygamy. One man who lives with two women. This practice for us as church is not normal. We say it's not the model for marriage. Because from the Bible, we learn that one man and one woman. This is our faith, our doctrine. But the reality is there, mainly in a country, Islamic country, like Senegal, Mali. This practice is normal. Because of this reality, we asked during the first session of the synod to study this reality and see what we can do as the church to change this reality. If we are talking about polygamy, it don't not mean that we approved this practice, but we have to accompany this reality, social reality, because we are sure in the future, polygamy must change. This is our opinion. The second point, woman deacon. It is one of the 10 points the Holy Father gave to the commission to study it. But the problem of women deacon, before we see this reality, we have to study the reality, the reality of diaconia in the church now, because today we have two forms of diaconia. The first one is the permanent deacon. In Africa, we have not this form because we are working with the catechist. But in Europe, you can meet some deacon working in the church. The second form is the transitional diaconia. But this part, the problem of diaconia today in the church, in the beginning of the church, we had women, men as deacon. But after some times, diaconia becomes the first part of priesthood. Now we have to see if Diaconia is the service in the church. If diaconia is the service, women can become deacon. But if diaconia is the first part of priesthood, we have to see what we do with this. I think this is the problem today. But in reality, I'm sure we have to come back as it was in the beginning of the church.
That was Cardinal Fridolin Ambongo Besungu, President of the Symposium of Episcopal Conferences of Africa and Madagascar and Archbishop of Kinshasa in the DRC. He was speaking there to Sheila Purish.
And now, our feature, Millennium Appointment. As you heard on this program, reports from Kenya say the total number of people killed in the floods was 228 by Sunday. But the death toll is expected to rise because the rains continue in different parts of the country. Kenya has for weeks been experiencing heavy rains that caused landslides in higher areas and floods in lowlands, destroying homes, farms, and healthy facilities. In addition to killing many, the calamity has displaced thousands and washed away roads and bridges. The government said on Sunday that its search and rescue operations continue in the most affected areas, while the country's meteorological department has warned that the intensity of the torrential rains will increase in the coming days. In all, 31 counties have been badly affected, two of which are found in Garissa Catholic Diocese. Bishop George Mutaka is the ordinary of Garissa. He spoke to Vatican Radio at the weekend about the situation.
We have been heavily affected by the floods. Garissa is a semi-arid area, and so we don't experience much rains. But now, as we speak, it is not easy to access Garissa by road, because what has happened is that we have a river that passes near Garissa Court and a river which takes the water to Indian Ocean. So what happens is that when it rains a lot in other parts of the country, we have two major dams called the Masinga and the Kiambere dams that supply electricity to Kenya. So when there are a lot of rains and these dams are full, the government or the people in charge open so that they can reduce the volume of water so that it doesn't break. And so that water comes by Tana River. And because Garissa is relatively flat, then we are flooded. And that is what has happened. It has flooded, and the road has been completely washed away. And therefore, my people, they are not able to move out of Garissa or people to come to Garissa unless they go by air, and very few people can afford, or they use another route, which is a bit far. And therefore, we are heavily affected by the flooding that has taken place.
Have the homes and economic activities of the people been affected by the floods?
Yes, they have been affected. First of all, education has been affected, as the president has decided to have the school closed indefinitely, especially the primary and the secondary, because it's clear, like for Garissa, the children cannot be able to go to school. There is nowhere to pass. Then what happens in Garissa? So we have two counties where I stay, in Garissa and the Tana River. And majority of people move between these two counties. People from Tana River, a place called Madogo Mororo, they come over for jobs in Garissa. And therefore now people cannot come for work. So that means there are some people who have no jobs, some are casual workers, so they get something every single day to feed their families. Now that is a problem for many families. Secondly, the supply of food now becomes a problem. They are not able to access the road to bring the food, and therefore some people are going hungry. There are some villages that have been wiped away, so some families have no homes. Recently, a number of them died, the boat capsized, a number of them died. And therefore, economically, people have been affected. People are hungry. And in fact, as a diocese, we have decided to make an appeal, and even the conference, the Kenya Conference of Catholic Bishops, they have also made an appeal so that we see how we can support our people, maybe with some food, some blankets, and so on.
Bishop, you can also appeal through Vatican Radio.
On behalf of the people of Garissa, and of course even Kenya, because it's not only Garissa diocese that have been affected, I'm appealing to the listeners of Vatican Radio, wherever they may be, if anybody is in a position to support us with the people who have been affected by flooding. I know many people have lost their livelihood. We are very sorry that some people have lost their lives. We know some infrastructures have been destroyed in some of our schools, and therefore I'm making an appeal to anybody who can reach out and help in whatever way they can, that they do so to those people who are affected, not only in Garissa, but anywhere, even as you have spoken of Uganda, Tanzania. So I'm making an appeal to any organization and to anybody who can be able to help to do so, so that we may be able to save lives and to help our people.
Bishop George Mutaka, the ordinary of Garissa Catholic Diocese, speaking there on Saturday from Garissa. I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Justice and Peace. I am Festus Tarawali, and do join us then. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.